Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down. Cruise, man. Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys can get in your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Welcome to another Parents Coaching Parents Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, M.A. Scott, and as always, we promise you another wonderful show this evening. This show is going to have some information, folks. You know, I say this each and every week, but at some point in time, I guess you may catch on and decide to listen to me and realize that the information that I'm trying to share with you is just for the good. It's for the information to make sure that you understand what your child may be getting involved in if your child's playing sports at any level, whether or not it's the recreation level, whether or not it's the middle school level, high school level, college level, or even at the professional level. So definitely we have some information for you. Parents Coach Parents is here each and every Sunday evening at 9:30 p.m. If you want to call in and join in on the conversation, you can always reach us at 917-889-8095. I'll say that number again, 917-889-8095. Well, you know, I don't go without starting the show without playing my man, Mr. Keith Wright, college experience, a little piece he put together for the Parents Coach Parents Network. And each and every week I like to play this little piece. So I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then we're going to get on with our show. Where you at, Keith?
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know what would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.
Come on, folks. You heard it. My man, Mr. Keith Wright, say he's making smart cool. Hey, each and every time I hear that piece, each and every time I hear, I have to echo that last part. He's making okay to be smart there, young folks. Pass it on to your children. It's okay to be smart. Being smart is not a bad thing. Even the President of the United States said, who actually is a fellow alumni of Keith Wright. And that's how far that goes. I don't know if that's something that they pump in the culture up there at Harvard or what, but that seems to be something that both Keith Wright and the president has shared with us. It's okay to be smart. And I'm quite sure that our guest is even going to share some equally information on it's okay to be smart. Be smart at whatever you get involved in, because this could be a tricky game out here if you're involved in the sporting industry at the professional, college level, and nowadays it's even starting to filter down to our high school level. See, you know, our young middle school athletes will be caught up in it. They already got Pop Warner football on TV. They already have Little League baseball on TV, how they went out there and know, stressed the point and made a few dollars on some of the young folks that played in the Little League game here this past summer. But I'm not going to go any further, folks, because I know you called to listen and hear what our guest had to say. Our guest is Mr. Everett Glenn. And I don't even believe I even said that because I've known that for a number of years, a longtime friend. I actually look at him as my mentor and my sounding board oftentimes when I need to just reach out to him and get some wise counseling or get a reality check on things because I like to say when this brother brings it to us, he brings it to us straight and make sure that we fully understand the real picture behind the picture. Oftentimes we don't even know what we don't know. But without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring the brother in. Everett, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey, always, always, brother. Always good to hear you. Well, what you going to share with us this evening, sir?
Well, I first would like to qualify myself. I don't know who I was on the phone and if I've not met some of the folk before. But I've been an attorney for 36 years. I'm a corporate attorney, worked at some of the largest law firms in the whole country, practicing commercial and banking and real estate law. And it was back in 1982 that I decided that I would, actually it was a goal of mine as a kid to work in the sports industry, and everything I did from the time I was a little guy was to position me to do that. And so I was sitting in my office in San Francisco, and I had heard about this kid, Clark Kellogg, out of Cleveland, which is my hometown, who was being hailed as the next Magic Johnson. So I made a few phone calls, and I think after maybe two or three phone calls, I got connected with Clark's dad. I went to Cleveland and visited with them. They selected me to represent them over IMG and ProServe, the big boys. I had never represented a guy in pro sports at the time. And went on to represent Jerry Rice and Reggie White and Richard Dent and Willie Gault and Clark Kellogg and Buck Johnson and John L. Williams and a whole bunch of folk. I was the first black guy to represent multiple first-round picks in the same draft. I did that twice. And I was the first guy, black or white, and the only guy, even up to this point, to represent multiple first-round picks in the NBA and in the NFL in the same year. And I did that twice. Nowadays, guys position themselves as basketball agents or as football agents. And so while you have agencies now that might represent basketball and football players, the basketball agents represent basketball players and the football guys represent football guys. So back in 1985, I was representing both basketball and football players quite well. And so I've got, and I represent a whole host of kids in high school and college sports. This past, last couple of weeks, I've been on the phone at least four times with the University of Louisville and their compliance folk and the assistant basketball coach there on behalf of Shaquan Aaron. Shaquan is a kid that is from Los Angeles but moved up to Seattle as a sophomore. In his junior and senior years, he led his team to the state championship. I forget the high school, the same one that Jamal Crawford went to up there in Seattle. And he's a 6'9", do-it-all kind of kid who's got NBA stamped on his forehead, right? But we're wrestling with Louisville under these rules that we don't know anything about. They make the rules that affect our children. They're asking Mr. and Mrs. Aaron to prove that they paid for the gas to transport their son to to and from high school in the ninth grade. And I hope you guys heard me. They're asking
the mom and the dad
to prove that they paid tuition in the ninth grade, that they paid for all of the transportation costs, gas. They want receipts. They want bank statements in order to certify him as an amateur. They want to prove that the rent that they paid it in the different places that they live. It's unbelievable.
So who are they trying to say paid all this?
Well, our point is simply the mother and father have been and continue to be gainfully employed. And the grandfather has been a supporter of the effort and, you know, helping out the family as well. And so we're not going to give you all of this stuff. They haven't, and somebody has dropped a dime on the kid, right? And somebody's, some coach who's disgruntled or whomever, they think this kid has been paid because he actually hasn't been paid. He didn't even play AAU basketball until the 11th grade because his folks didn't want to get him caught up in all of that. But yeah, okay. They're having to go back and prove, or they're being asked to prove, that they paid expenses for their son when he was in the ninth grade in order to certify him for freshman eligibility at the University of Louisville. Which brings us to today's topic, which is a line that we have we came up with it. It's the intersection of race. We've coined it, I guess would be what you say. We've coined this phrase, the intersection of race and sports and money. Now, the Webster's Dictionary defines an intersection as a place or area where two or more things meet. Okay, and so in this country, race and sports and money meet in college. They meet in the NBA, and they meet in the NFL. Most folk are probably familiar with when they talk about class and race and gender and the intersection and injustices perpetrated on poor and racial minorities and women. But again, we think that the same thing is happening in sports, and we're just sitting back as spectators, as these crashes occur at the intersection of race and sports and money. Now, the intersection first occurred in college sports back in 1970 or thereabouts. At the time, you know, black folk couldn't go to Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, LSU, and a whole bunch of other schools. USC came down to Tuscaloosa, beat Alabama with a bunch of black kids, and the next year Alabama's team was two-thirds black. And today all of the SEC schools are predominantly black, and what went from $1 million a year business is now multi-billions. And the schools, the former schools, the Gramblings and the Jackson States and the Alcorns and Alabama States and the North Carolina A&Ts face extinction. And their athletic budgets, the combined athletic budget of the four major black conferences, the MEAC, the SWAC, the CIAA, and the SIAC, the combined budgets of all four of those conferences, which represent 48 schools, is less than what a single Big Ten school or a single Pac-10 school or a single SEC school receives from television revenue alone. So there's a huge crash at the intersection of race and sports and money. They have taken our boys and turned college sports into a multi-billion-dollar per year industry. And mind you, the University of Pennsylvania did a study where they looked at these top six conferences and the 120 schools that they represent, and determined that on average, about 35% of our boys are graduating within 6 years. 35%. University of California, Berkeley, reported to be the best public institution of higher education in this country, has the worst graduation rate for our boys in the Pac-12. That's another crash at the intersection of race, sports, and money, because what they have done is put profit and money ahead of the well-being of our young men. So while we're spending money sending our kids to camps that for the most part they run too, and trying to work on their games, they're taking that talent that we've developed and they're turning it into, again, a business on every level. I'm writing a post for Huffington Post. I'm a blogger for Huffington Post, and I'm writing a piece right now where I'm going to look at the sneaker dough, right, and the money that's made off of sneakers. And it's amazing. Michael Jordan, for example, he basically is behind Nike, which now is a $28 billion company, $28 billion. Now, they pay Michael $75 million based upon the sale of sneakers and socks and hoodies and shorts and everything that has the Jordan brand on it. Now, $75 million, that's a lot of dough. I don't care how you look at it. However, $75 million is less than 3% of the $2 billion that Nike makes off of the Jordan brand. I'm going to repeat that. $75 million is less than 3% of the $2 billion that Nike makes just off of Jordans. And again, Michael Jordan's name launched Nike. So one could argue easily that he's producing more than just the $2 billion, but that the $26 billion in sales that Nike posted last year are in large part due to Michael Jordan. So you say, well, why are we concerned that, you know, Michael's making $75 million and, you know, Nike's making $2 billion. Well, Phil Knight's net worth, the guy who Michael has made rich, his net worth is $18.4 billion. Okay. Now, Michael Jordan, he don't even rank in the top 100 most wealthy individuals. In fact, he's fourth among blacks with a net worth of $525 million. So the man who Michael is working for is worth $18.5 billion, and Michael is worth $500 million. That's what happens at the intersection of race and sports and money. I mean, it's not that difficult to make a sneaker, but it's easier to let Nike go to China, Indonesia, and these other places and make these shoes with slave labor than it would be to have a factory, say, in the United States, say, in our community, since Marquee Shoes are in fact aimed at black inner city kids who are willing to spend huge amounts of money every time the new hot shoe hits the shelf. In fact, an Adidas executive is quoted in a Forbes article saying that the day after payday is the biggest sales day in the marquee shoe category, as though exploitation is not really an issue for shoe company executives. So it's just amazing what's happening at this intersection. I mean, some recent examples are the intersection of race, sports, and money. I mean, the Ray Rice situation. They've been, according to the records that have been released that are public, there have been 56 cases where NFL players have been charged. Not convicted, but charged. 56 cases in 6 years. According to the domestic violence hotline, they had 77,000 calls that didn't get answered just last year. 77,000 calls. So how can 56 calls in 6 years justify all of the noise that they're making? How could they make Ray Rice the face of domestic violence when there have only been 56 arrest in 6 years, but 77,000 calls just last year? That's a crash at the intersection of race and sports and money. And how can the NFL then, in responding to this, in a league that's 70% black, hire 4 white women to develop their response and to develop a program, again, for a group of individuals, 70% of them are black. Now, I'm not a domestic violence expert, but I have done a little bit of research, and it's well accepted beyond any reasonable doubt that there are cultural differences and cultural things that you need to take into consideration when you're considering domestic violence and sexual abuse. And I don't know how you can take those things into consideration if they hire 4 white women to monitor the behavior and try to help address a problem that they have painted with a black face. Now, yeah. Beyond that, and I'll let you jump in here, Mike, but the intersection goes further now. Again, despite the fact there's been only 56 charges, not convictions, 56 charges in 6 years, now the National Organization of Women and the National Domestic Violence Hotline, they put enough pressure on the NFL that the NFL is committed to a 5-year partnership to address domestic violence generally. Now, they make it seem like it's an NFL problem, which we all know is not just an NFL problem, but the NFL is writing a check. In fact, I saw a commercial on today that must be on with NFL money, because I had never seen a commercial about it before by No More, which is another women's rights organization. So I'm not mad at them for writing the check, you know, because we need to try to fix that problem. I don't necessarily understand it, but it's clearly a problem. But if 70% of black boys are not graduating, and if, according to their own statistics, 80% of NFL players will be broke or facing financial difficulty, divorced, and without a job within a few years of retirement, and if 60 to 70% of NBA players suffer the same fate, why doesn't the NFL and the NBA invest in solutions to that problem? Because that is more widespread, and it affects their workforce. But again, that's what happens at these crashes at the intersection of race and sports and money. The ambulance always comes to get us. We're the ones that get killed and hurt and maimed in these intersections and these crashes that occur. And so what we've decided to do is come together to, at the same time they were integrating college sports, the first intersection in the crashes, over in the Middle East, in Kuwait, in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, and Iraq, some white folk was discovering oil in commercial quantities. Now, and at the time, those countries were dirt poor. They didn't know anything about oil. They didn't have no equipment. And so these, you know, the BPs and the Exxons, they said, look, you know, we'll deal with your oil for you. And we'll give you, you know, 10 cents on the dollar. Because after all, we're spending our money and we're using our resources, our expertise, our equipment. And so those oil companies, I mean, it sounds familiar. It's like black people. You know, we were poor, and so they come get our boys. Same kind of thing. And but the difference is the Arabs, after they saved up a few dollars, okay, not the tens of millions that they're paying our boys, they saved a few dollars, and they sent some of their kids over here to the United States to learn about the oil business. And 10 years after that, they formed an organization called OPEC, which is the Organization of Oil Exporting Countries. Now, at the time they formed OPEC, the major international oil companies controlled 85% of the world's oil reserves, 85%. Today, those same companies control less than 5% because the Arab countries came together and they put aside their differences. Mind you, they fight each other to the death, you know, Sunni Muslims and this kind of Muslim and this and that. Despite all of those differences, they realize that their mutual benefit demanded that they come together around their resource. And they did it, and they have caused an 75% shift in the economics of oil. And so I would submit, and we can open up the conversation, that our young men are just like oil. They are a natural resource. In fact, they're more valuable than oil because we're running out of oil. And that's why we've been spending all this money and time and effort on alternative sources of energy, because we're running out of oil. But we're not going to never run out of Mike Scott's and LeBron James and Kevin Durant's and Derrick Rose's and Michael Vick's and Reggie Bush. We ain't going to never run out of them. And so what I'm suggesting that we need to do and what we are trying to lead is an effort where we could do what the Arabs did. Without Facebook, without Instagram, without computers, without cell phones, they came together and put aside their differences to rally around this resource and change the whole economics and built their countries, their economies, their infrastructure. And so when you consider black folk at the bottom of every good thing and at the top of every bad thing, imagine what we could do if Michael Jordan, instead of making Phil Knight a billionaire, would start his own shoe company. Again, he can go to China, get the same shoes made. that's just one opportunity. But we have to look at this thing differently, or else what has happened will continue to happen. And at every crash at the intersection, we will be the ones that they will be carting off on life support. Yes, sir, Mike.
Yeah, you know, I want to give folks an opportunity to call in and chime in on the conversation. If you want to chime in on the conversation, you can always reach us at 917 889 917-889-8095. You know, there's been some good insightful information that you shared with us so far. I want to get around to talking about one of the articles that I came across that you had, and it had the picture of, you may recall this article, the picture of the Kentucky team. And the caption reads in that article, "Only two of these black athletes will graduate, and all of the white ones will."
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
No, we want to touch on that here in a minute. I want to give some folks a chance to call in. I think we got some callers on the line. Let me see here. Area code 757, first three numbers is 714. Welcome to the Parents Coaching Parents Network. You have something you want to add to the conversation? 757-714.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I am listening to the conversation, and I'm amazed. Everything is coming into a certain perspective. When my daughter and I discussed the Ray Rice situation, it was from a whole certain angle, and I get it. And now that I've heard some of the statistics behind it, I'm just sitting back saying, wow. And of course, just like Ms. Everett, no one is diminishing the significance of domestic violence or anything like that. However, I'm hearing a scapegoat, you know, just really using Mr. Rice as a scapegoat when the backdrop is a lot of this has been going on, and unfortunately his career is the one that they pulled the plug on.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to chime in on that?
Well, I mean, the question that I've got to ask is, why don't black folk do like white women do? The white women, they came together and they demand, they put a picture of Roger Goodell on their website, and with the caption, "Roger Goodell must go." Okay, and despite doing that, he wrote them a check. Okay, so what we don't do is we talk about the stuff. First of all, we don't know as much as, and that's the benefit and the beauty of shows like Mike's and others, where we can get this information out, but we don't know, right? And it says in the Bible that my people perish from a lack of knowledge, and that's what's happening. There's a lack of knowledge in our community about the real business of sports. And even then, when we find out stuff, we don't take action. They take action. So you have a group of white women who were able to leverage three incidents of domestic violence into a five-year relationship and partnership with the NFL because they said something. On the other hand, you get 70% of our kids not getting degrees from these major colleges and universities, and we ain't saying nothing. You get 80% of our boys going bankrupt after making millions, and we ain't saying nothing. And they all get agents and advisors and everybody else, and so, you know, they're blaming it on our boys. But if you look behind all this stuff, you know, it starts when they're young. And so just like we can direct attention and money to domestic violence, then we need to be directing our attention to these boys when they're in the sixth grade, because in fact, if we can help them then, we can actually stop some of this domestic violence, because a lot of it in sports, at least in my opinion, is based on the lack of self-esteem. Even though these guys make this money in sports, many of them, that's all they can do. And whenever they feel like that's threatened, and you know, the plug can be pulled any day, any given Sunday. So there's not a lot of stability in the career. They get involved many times in relationships that are based on the fact that they play in the league. You know, in other words, they got a woman who probably they couldn't get if they didn't play in the NFL or the NBA. And when that gets shaky, then, you know, the relationship gets shaky. And, you know, emotions, you know, lead to stuff. So, if again, you have two bright women hold the NFL hostage behind three incidents of domestic violence, and we get 70% of our kids failing at college and university around the country, we ain't saying nothing. You got them going bankrupt after making all this money with these, you know, CAAs and IMGs and pro-service representatives, and we ain't saying nothing. In fact, what we're doing is keep taking our kids to the same place, expecting a different result, which is the definition of insanity. So if we don't say nothing, we're not going to get a different result. We got to stand up and take a stand. If we want this to change, they don't want it to change because Phil Knight's making $18 billion. So that's why he will come back around and pay LeBron or just pay Kevin Durant $300 million for 10 years, which, again, is a lot of money, but not when you look at how much Phil Knight is making.
Right.
Yeah. So we have to say something. We have to take a stand, and unless until we take a stand, every inch of progress that we have made in this country from the time of slavery is a result of our taking a stand. And yet we refuse to take a stand in an industry called sports that our boys dominate, an industry that at almost $600 billion per year is one of the 10 largest industries in the world. There is not another industry that exists on this planet where if you took our boys out of it, the industry couldn't exist. And not just the game, but the sneakers and all this ancillary money that they're making off of the gas, again, it couldn't exist without our boys. And so why don't we do like the white women that run now in the National Organization or Coalition Against Domestic Violence? Why don't we take a stand? Why don't we write Adam Silver at the NBA and demand that he make a contribution to organizations that's going down deep before these kids become, you know, so-called stars or whatever, and fix all of them, because you don't know who's going to make it, and even the ones who make it, they need to do better, clearly, based on the results that are being achieved. Why don't we do that? What are we afraid of? These white women, again, they put a picture of Roger Goodell on their website and said he must go.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote him a check.
He wrote them a check.
He wrote them a check, but on their website, they had a picture. They still got it up there. If you go to now, let me see if they still get it up on their website. Yeah, they said, Roger Goodell got to go. And he wrote them a check. They call it hush money, right? Now, when Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson was running around holding these corporations hostage on, you know, discrimination, or they still got it up there. They got a check from them, and they still get a picture, resign Roger Goodell. That's the hashtag, resign Goodell. But he has written them a check, and they still get this up on their site. And we're afraid to stand up. So I can imagine that they are sitting back in a room laughing at us. That's what I can imagine they're doing, sitting in a room laughing at us, saying they can't even believe that in 2014, black folks still scared. We still, this remnants of slavery and this brainwashing and this media and all this stuff we know has been designed to perpetuate, that we still buying this stuff in 2014.
Mr. Glenn,
did that kind of sort of address? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, that did shine some light on some things. Mr. Glenn, I had the pleasure of meeting you a few years back at the Fraser Net Conference in Atlanta.
And who is this?
This is Karen Bailey. My company is the Resource King, and I actually run Youth Earn and Learn Jobs for Kids, where we work with ages 12 and up. So when you say at least in sixth grade, it's like, yes. So we are starting at ages 12 and up, And when you talk about the statistics in terms of 70% not graduating, our young men and young ladies and children in the industry not being able to graduate from college, my daughter is a graduate of Howard University, and her freshman year, they told her, look to the left, look to the right, because only one in three of you are going to graduate. Only one in three. And they told her that her freshman year at Howard University, and she said when she graduated, she thought about who was on her dorm floor, and to the T, only one in three of them graduated, one out of every three. So it's an appalling, abysmal statistic, not just for the athletes, but just across the whole realm, across the campus. The numbers are down.
That's true, but see, and this is just a conversation. This is good. We're interacting here. Our focus is just on the athletes because the athletes generate $600 billion. Plus, we think if we can get to the athletes, this smaller group, and we can equip them, then they can best reach their peers. If we can get the athletes to model a certain kind of behavior and make, you know, academics and success as important as scoring a basket, then they could take that same message to their peers, because on these same campuses that we're talking about, the discrepancy or the variance in the population of black males generally versus the number of blacks on these teams, that's even more appalling. At UCLA, USC, for example, the black male population is about 2% on the whole campus. But the football team is 70% black, and the basketball team is 95% black, when only 2% of the black males on campus. And that phenomena exists at every college in this country, from University of Virginia, University of Alabama, University of Michigan, Notre Dame. You pick a college. And with all of these anti-affirmative action efforts around the country, they're making it nearly impossible for a black boy to get to college if he don't play sports. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't say nothing. So why should they care when we don't say nothing about what's happening right before our very eyes? They produce a report where they document that they're exploiting our boys, and we don't say nothing. We don't do nothing. And so, therefore, the system is just perpetuated. And now, I mean, their response to all of this is to start figuring out how they can make more money. So they come up with the BCS Championship Series. So in two or three games, they're going to make another $150 million off our boys. Make them play another game. After playing 12 or 13, 14 football games, play another couple games so they can make another couple hundred million dollars. And we don't say nothing. You know, in fact, the argument about paying the kids, that's not even black folk ain't leading that conversation. That's white folk who's saying they should pay them, because paying them would still be peanuts compared to the money that's being made. And you could never pay them equally, because the way our boys are being brainwashed, and you got the quarterback or the wide receiver or the hot shot running back or the hot shot power forward or the hot shot point guard, he's going to think he's worth more than the other guy. So they ain't going to never pay him. But if they paid him, the graduation rate would go down worse than it is now, because they don't go to school now and they're not getting paid. So if you gave them some money, I would think the result would be disastrous. Mm-hmm. And the money would be gone before they graduated or before the eligibility was up, and then they would stop paying them. and they would be in a worse situation.
What we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break.
and we're going to come right back. Join us, everyone. We're talking with Mr. Eric Glenn. He's been sharing some wonderful insight with us. And if you want to give us a call and join in on the conversation, you can reach us at 917-889-8095. We'll be right back, folks.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
Early as possible. It seems like in this day and age, kids are thinking about it younger and younger, and colleges are actually getting out and communicating with kids as they're younger. So it seems to me, you know, at least by freshman, sophomore year, get an idea of whether you want to play in college, and if the answer to that is yes, start to figure out what your game plan is and then move forward.
You right there.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
What is the NAIA?
The National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics is the organizing body that oversees college athletics for its member schools. Schools who are members of the NAIA are made of smaller colleges located in the United States and Canada. The NAIA was established in 1952 as an organization to establish competition between colleges. The NAIA sponsors 13 different sports and runs 23 annual championships for those sports in both men's and women's athletics. The NAIA has different member schools than the NCAA and has different eligibility requirements as well. To make sure you are eligible to compete at an NAIA school, you need to register with the NAIA Eligibility Center at playnaia.org. Feel free to learn more at our website, athleticscholarships.net. Get recruited to play college sports today.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Okay, we're back. We've been talking with Mr. Eric Glenn, and he's been in enlightening us with the concept or the intersection between money, sports, and race. And he definitely shared some information with us this evening. It was an eye-opener. Folks, if you're on the call, you want to join in on the conversation, you can always reach us at 917-889-8095. I'll say that number again, 917-889-8095, option one. We'll get you into the conversation with Mr. Everett Glenn. Everett, are you back with us?
Yes, I am, sir.
Okay, that's great, that's great. You know, you've shared a whole lot with us and a whole lot of figures and a whole lot of information with us this evening. And, you know, even chimed in on the situation with Ray Rice and all the other stuff that's going on with the other young men around the country. What are some of the things that we can do? And you touched on it earlier. What are some of the things that we can do to help try to prevent that? And when I said when you touched on it earlier, you touched on the piece about being able to reach the kids earlier on, because we here at the Parents Coach the Parents Network, we stress the point of trying to reach kids at the middle school level and then trying to groom them all the way through. And that will probably, with our hope and our wishes and our guidance, cut down on some of the shortfalls that many of our young men are experiencing after they get into the college and the professional levels. So
absolutely, but what
we need
to do, we need to get the NFL and we need to get the NBA to support that effort. So I don't know we have some organizations, for example. There's the mothers of pro athletes. There's the fathers of pro athletes. Now, I don't know if it's an all-black organization, but everybody I see on the website is black. On the mothers of pro athletes and the fathers of pro athletes, they're all black people.
Yeah.
And then there's MOCA, which, again, I believe that's all black people. So these organizations who, and even parents, coaching parents, these organizations, what we did in San Francisco as an example, we found out that the 49ers were building a new stadium, the one they played in today, you just saw them beat Philadelphia in their new stadium. That's $1.5 billion project that they built with less than 1% black participation. Now, mind you, Santa Clara County is 60% minority. That's where the stadium is located, Santa Clara County. 60% minority. The team is 85% black. The 49ers, they sent us an email that said they have a long-standing and unwavering commitment to diversity, quote, unquote. Turner Construction, that built it, they have on their website a picture of 25 black contractors. And underneath it, they have a statement that says they strive for 20% participation on every project they build. So how can they have less than 1% on this stadium project if they say they strive for 20%? How can they have less than 1% if the 49ers say they have a longstanding and unwavering commitment to diversity? How can they have less than 1% in a county that's 60% minority? How can they have less than 1% for a team that's 85% black? Well, what we did was rally the support of the Urban League and the National Action Network and Rainbow Push and the National Association of Minority Contractors and some other groups, and we wrote a letter to the NFL and to the 49ers and to Turner and to Levi after they paid $250 million just to put their name on the stadium. And at the time we intervened, that project was 60% completed and 80% contracted. And at that time, they had no black participation, none, zero. And out of what they had left, we were able to pressure them into creating $30 million worth of opportunities for black folk. And so, again, we confronted them. We stayed on them. Something happened, positive. And the same thing has to happen. And we have seen examples of it again. The NOW and the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, they pressured the NFL behind three incidents to get them to write a check so they could address the problem of domestic violence. So we have this problem with our boys that we need to go back down to the sixth grade. That costs money to do.
Exactly.
I'm not talking about this episodic kind of approach that has prevailed to date, like an episode of a TV show. Okay, so we have an event or a camp or something for one day or a couple of hours or a couple of days, and then the kids go back to doing whatever they did. That's an episode, right? But we have to have the programs, and they exist around this country, not related to athletes, but we could take the same. There's a program called Sponsors for Education Opportunities out of New York. They take black boys and girls in the sixth grade, and they stay connected with them every year from the sixth grade through high school and to college. And they have a 90-some percent success rate, turning these black boys and girls into investment bankers and lawyers and all kind of stuff. But they keep their hands on them from the sixth grade throughout high school and college. And so there is not a program that exists today where we do that. Again, we might have a camp here, something there. We might have a pro athlete come and talk to the kids, tell them to stay in school and don't use drugs. And then he go back and they never see him again. So what it's going to take is the same kind of effort that has produced people like me. I mean, I was, you know, from the inner city of Cleveland, you know, failure stamped on my head. Growing up, you know, I mean, everybody I knew was in jail or on drugs, you know. I mean, you know, that's just what the neighborhood. I mean, there's three guys on my block that went to college. And, but I was in a program starting in the sixth grade. They identified me as a, you know, black boy that got some potential. And I was in a program in the sixth grade at Oberlin College, which is where I wound up going to college, because I met Avery Brooks, wonderful, amazing actor. You've seen him on Spencer for Hire and Hawk, and he was the first black captain on Star Trek. I met him when I was in the sixth grade. So that was like meeting Michael Jordan to me. Yeah. And then in the seventh grade, I was in a program in university school, eighth grade at John Carroll University, the ninth through 12th at Case Western Reserve. So they took a guy who had failure stamped on his head and turned him into a guy who thought he could do anything. But it wasn't hit and miss here and there. These programs I was involved in were six-week programs in the summer, every summer from the sixth grade till I graduated high school. So by the time I went to college, I was confident that I could compete with anybody. And in fact, because I came from nothing, I was more confident because I had some stuff that the kids who had stuff given to them didn't have, and that was this desire to be successful, understanding that nobody was going to give me anything. So if we can do the same thing for our boys, and we have actually started such a program. This summer,
yes,
we had 50 sixth grade student athletes for 2 weeks. And we worked with them on everything but sports. We had sessions on decision science, like how do you make decisions? I mean, decision science is a whole topic of conversation now that they have in schools. Like, how do you make decisions? How do kids make decisions? The kind of decisions they have to make. Branding and social media and nutrition and just all kinds of stuff, personal development, leadership, everything to get them to understand the value of developing whole, not just this one part of them, this athletic side, because, again, that's the hardest job to get. I mean, 0.3% of high school basketball players will ever see an NBA court other than as a fan. 0.3%. I don't care how good you are. 0.3% from high school to the NBA. In football, 0.8%, no matter how good you are. And so with those numbers that our kids are facing, the mathematics of it, would dictate that we go back and help these same guys who are playing sports, especially when you look at the leaders of the free world, you know, starting with our own president, who himself was a former athlete, our Secretary
exactly.
of Education, Arm Duncan, he's a former athlete, Bill Bradley, a congressman, former athlete. There's a whole bunch of guys who are running companies and doing amazing stuff, who are former athletes because, you know, athletic participation teaches you stuff that you can't learn other places. You can't learn hard work and determination and how to respond to defeat and the focus and practice and all these kinds of things that athletics teaches us. All that stuff is directly transferable. I mean, we tried to get Time Warner, for example, to sponsor our program, which is called BOSS, Business of Success Beyond Sports. And we have a STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math component of it. And they said, well, science and technology, engineering, and math don't have nothing to do with sports. That's what they told us 3 years ago. And we, you know, we said, well, we disagree because here's all these examples of how they're using technology and everything else in sports. And they still disagree with us. Now, a year ago, they just announced a $100 million sports and STEM initiative. And they ain't going to use us.
Wow.
Okay, because
wow.
we don't say nothing. We don't say nothing. So they're doing this, and then what they go do is they go hire Victor Cruz from the New York Giants to be the spokesperson, and Victor Cruz nearly flunked out of college three times. He didn't major in science, technology, engineering, and math, but they're going to write him a check. So they write one black man a check, and then they write a whole bunch of other white folks some money to go do something that they said wasn't even no connection just a couple of years ago. We got this shit in writing when we approached them. And they said, in fact, the lady we was talking to, she herself was an engineer, but she was working in special projects for Time Warner. We would say, well, you using engineering to do something different, so how can you suggest that it's not transferable when you're not even an engineer today? But that's what you got a degree out of Vanderbilt in engineering. So we have to say something. We need these organizations, the mothers of pro athletes, the fathers of pro athletes, MOCA, we need parents coaching parents, and other organizations to do like we did in San Francisco. Sign a letter, put your name on the line, and ask the NBA and NFL and Nike and these other organizations who are making grand theft money off our kids to help us fix the problem. It's no different than the help they're giving white women to address domestic violence. And that just happened again. That was like an episode, and bam, relief. What I'm describing here tonight has been going on for years. The lingering and persistent disparity in the graduation rates of our boys, that's been happening for 20 years in an instant like Ray Rice. For 20 years, but they're responding. And so that's one way, I think, if we get those organizations, if we would come together, like the Arabs came together, again, in countries that fight each other to the death, but they came together around the oil, we need to come together around our boys. We owe it to them and stand up for them. And we can't be afraid about what's going to happen because there's too many examples. Nothing happened to the women who stood up and challenged the commissioner, except he wrote them a check. So, but we're thinking that, you know, if we say something, somehow we're going to lose some Nike contract, or, you know, they're going to blackball us out of the league or whatever, when that has never happened when a guy has stood up for fairness and justice and what's right.
Exactly. Exactly.
You ain't never get blackballed for standing up for that.
No, never. Never, never.
Muhammad Ali.
We want to learn more about how to reach you and find out more about Boss and, you know, when we're going to have that pull together that coalition of folks to see how many folks really and truly want to be about standing up. So give us some contact information.
Well, the website is www.thenSA.org, www.thenSA.org. And then the email is eglenn@thenSA.org. eglenn@thenSA.org. And then the phone number is 562-619-8460. 562-619-8460. And I can guarantee the listeners on this phone that if we did, if the parents of pro athletes, I mean the mothers of pro athletes, and if the fathers of pro athletes, and if MOCA, and if parents coaching parents, and these other organizations, if we would come together and sign a letter saying we're standing up for our boys, we could get the attention of Nike, we could get the attention of Under Armour, we could get the attention of the NBA, and we could get the attention of NFL, and all these other folks that are making all this money off our kids to help us do the right thing by our kids, because otherwise it's just not going to happen. It hasn't happened. There's no motivation on their part for it to happen. It's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Exactly.
I mean, they're changing the standards on what it takes to even be admitted into a division. They're going to make it, like I said, they're making it harder for our boys even to continue their education, even if they're athletes. And you get this archaic system that exists where you can have a mother and father this week on the telephone with the University of Louisville being asked to produce gasoline receipts from when their son was in the ninth grade. See, they set all the rules that affect us, and we don't say nothing. There ain't another group of people in the world, on the planet, would have other people set all these rules that govern and regulate them and not say nothing. And
nope.
The rules are not fair. The rules are not fair. They're not applied equally. And we don't say nothing. I mean, you know, it's just amazing, you know. But we have hope, which never fails. Hope never fails. And again, if you could have been in the room with these kids for this two-week period of time and see some of the folks, Shelley Smith from ESPN and Clark Kellogg from CBS and Glenn Milburn, Stanford, and 12, 13 years in the NFL, who's a successful real estate developer, and Kevin McDowell, the chief administrative officer of AEG, the largest presenter of sports entertainment in the world, and Daryl Miller, the top Hollywood attorney, you know, for Angela Bassett and her husband, and just all kind of folk. These kids got to interact with people they would never meet in their life, probably in the sixth grade. And so
exactly.
We already see the light bulbs going on with these guys. But again, it costs money to do it, and the people who are making the money, they need to step up. But if we don't come together as a group and ask them to do that, then they'll just ignore me. They'll ignore us.
Well, that's so true. We've been having this conversation for a while now. As we prepare to get ready to wrap up here, you know, I think what we're going to do, we're going to put out a call to all these organizations that you name, ask them to join us here on the show, and let you give that spiel again and see how many of them step up to say, okay, hey, yes, let's go ahead and move forward with it.
Yes, and we got to do that, and if the ones, I mean, what we have to do is we got to stop being nice with each other. There was a time we used to be honest with each other, and keep it like the kids say today, keep it 100 or keep it real. And so, if these groups refuse to stand up, then we need to talk about them, because either you are part of the solution or you are part of the problem. There ain't no middle ground.
All right.
And there's no reason the world.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to wind down here because we got about 50 seconds left.
Okay, wait. When you get off the phone, send me the link to that song that you played. Is there a link I can go to hear that?
I can send you a copy of it. I'll send you a copy of it.
Yeah, I mean electronically, where I can listen on my computer.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Because I like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've been listening to Mr. Everett Glenn from the National Sports Authority, folks, and if you haven't heard it, you just heard it for yourself live and in person, you know, it's time for us to step up, speak up and speak out. Be about the business. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. As always, you've been here with the Parents Coach, the Parents Network, folks, and it's definitely been a pleasure. We will continue this conversation at a later date, and Mr. Keith Wright, go ahead and close us out. We'll be right back.